On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina.
Yeah, I really like that. That was kind of my point I was going to get to, is working in that collaborative environment with those guys. Obviously, I know the staff, and we definitely have to include Joel in there, or he might be upset.
How could I forget?
But yeah, that was kind of the thing that I have been thinking about is, you know, you almost need to understand that sometimes guys are going to want to go talk to somebody else, and that's just the reality of it. And you know, when Yosh and I would be together, like, that was just how we operated. Like, I never really thought twice about, like, all right, that's kind of his guy, this is kind of my guy, we can kind of connect with whoever. But you know, if a conversation needs to be had, like, I'm the guy or he's the guy. And then, you know, you get away from that and you're like, this isn't how it is everywhere. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes people get really upset that player X wants to go talk to Joel instead of Kevin, or instead of you, or instead of, you know, Ricky, or whatever the case. And it's like, it just kind of caught me off guard that kind of happens that way. Cause I'm like, you know, at the end of the day, the player is the center of everything. And if we can help them, right, like, I don't give a shit if I'm helping them or Kiyoshi's helping them or you're helping them or, I don't know, the janitor's helping them. You know what I mean? Like, these guys want help, and sometimes they'll go to the person that they're not around the most, just for an outside perspective, set of eyes, whatever. And you have to be okay with that. And I think especially in that rehab setting, that really is valuable. And then, you know, that's the other side, is you can use that to your advantage. If, like, if you know somebody wants to go to Ricky, be like, hey, I talked to Ricky, he said we should try this, like, what do you think about that? And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, this guy is on my side. And it just keeps building on that. So I think that part is something that is really valuable in rehab, and being able to have the mental skills staff down there, being able to have the quality of coaches and PTs and ATs down there, like, it just creates a good environment for everybody. And I mean, the reality is, even if the environment's good, sometimes guys just not feeling it, and you got to be able to catch them when they're not, and, you know, talk them off of the ledge and get them back into that I want to throw 100 mindset and not I want to hang it up mindset. And sometimes they just need to rant and let that out of them, and they're good. Sometimes they need a little bit more of an intervention. And when that's the case, like, knowing who the person is, I think, is incredibly valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't tell you how many times we've had, it's like, last dude, he's in the weight room, kind of had a down day, and, like, everybody leaves, the music's low, and then it'll just, you know, like, you're just going back and forth about nothing to do with his rehab, nothing to do with baseball, just like life going back and forth for 30-40 minutes, and he's like, oh man, that was great, like, all right dude, I'll see you tomorrow. You know what I mean? It's like, he just needed that, like, he needed that conversation. I think that's gets lost sometimes, like, guys are down here, they're living in the hotel full-time, you know, maybe they got a guy that they played with before who's in the rehab group, maybe not, you know, and they're floundering, and they need somebody. They need that support staff. Like, you hit the nail on the head. I always joke that we're like the 07 Cavs, and the player is LeBron. And it's just like, dude, no one knows anyone else who's on that roster. Just get LeBron the ball. Like, get the player to be successful. It doesn't matter who his guy is. Doesn't matter who has the ball right now. Someone else will have it the next time down court. But, like, as long as we get him that ball and he takes a shot, we're good. Like, as long as the athlete is progressing, that's what matters. And I think everyone on the rehab staff down here, nutrition, medical, strength, like, anyone who has a hand in that truly believes that. And I think that's why we have a lot of success as a team.
Yeah, I think the human element, man, is just, it's such a big part of sports that people forget about. And I don't know if it's because of the money they make or the lifestyle they live, or like the fact that you just can't see behind the curtain all the time as an everyday fan. And don't get me wrong, like the life is amazing. It's really cool that they all get to live out, you know, their childhood dreams, but it is a business. It is very demanding. It's like, you know, I've talked to people and they're like, oh, I could do that. I would do that in a heartbeat. And I'm like, you can't work like a 9 to 5 without complaining about having a day off. And you have 2 days off every weekend. Like, we had a stretch where we played 30 games in 31 days. And the one day we were off, we traveled. So there were no days off. Like, you can't, I was having this conversation the other day also, like, you can't hide from the big leagues. You can't hide from the mistakes. You can't hide from having to wake up every day and just go to work and, like, you know, grind. And in the real world, it's like, you know, sometimes there are days where it feels overwhelming and you're like, ah, if I just get to Friday, I'll be good. I'll be at the weekend. Yep. I can recharge. Like, there are times where it's overwhelming. Like, you wake up and you're like, especially down there, like you said, nobody wants to go back to the complex. Maybe a guy is lucky enough to have a friend in the rehab group, but then as soon as that guy graduates, he's on the island and he's got to wake up and, you know, do it again today and then do it again tomorrow and then do it again the next day. And then, you know, you have a setback and then it's like the end of the world. It's literally like, what am I doing this for? You know what I mean? You're in Fort Myers, Florida. There's not a lot going on down there. Like, and it's just a real part of things that I don't think people give enough credit to. And it's easy to just, you know, talk from the outside when you don't know what's going on. And it's like, oh, what's this guy complaining about? Oh, why is this guy not making his progress? Like, and sometimes it's even within the group. That's the tough part for me is, you know, not necessarily in my experience per se, but just, having heard from, you know, other people in the game and other people in sports, it's like, it's a big push from front offices and ownerships to like get guys back quicker. We don't want games lost. And it's like, you know, sometimes you're really playing with fire on those moments. And it's like, you know, when you say 4 to 6 weeks, they hear 4 weeks, not
yep.
6 weeks. And then when you hit 6 weeks, they're like, well, why did it take so long? And like, well, I did say 4 to 6 weeks. And they're like, well, why wasn't it 4? Why was it 6? And it's like, well, do you really want to go into the depths of this? Like,
right.
More to it than just the surface level, you know, physiology of things that were going on with this person's body. So I just think there's so many more elements to rehab than people understand. And so for me, like it never intrigued me, or maybe I was afraid of it, or maybe there was just too much to take in. And I'm curious, like, has this been a passion of yours from the start, or was this something that just kind of fell into your lap that you've like fully embraced and now you're like, yeah, I like this a lot?
I honestly would say that I think it's honestly something that just kind of like fell on me. You know, like I remember seeing the job posting and I was like, I don't know, like that seems like it would be a good challenge, a fun challenge. And it has been a challenge, I can assure you that. But it's been fun. I mean, it's like, I joke all the time with my friends. I'm like, dude, I am night and day better coach from taking this, just because you got to be like, we used to joke calling it the Omaha, like Peyton Manning, the audible. I mean, you got so many audibles in you that just, it's constant. You know, and just learning, again, the human element, like I sound like a broken record, but it's the truth. Like just being, you know, in college strength and conditioning where I came from, like you're running the group, it's 15, 20, 30 guys on the floor. And, you know, it's more about herding cats, really. You know, whereas this is truly like you get a guy for 12 months uninterrupted, a week at Thanksgiving, 2 weeks of Christmas and New Year's, and like he's back, you're back, 6-7 days a week, like grinding it till he comes back and hopefully pitches in a game in July. And like that relationship is everything. with that guy. And so, yeah, it's just, it's been awesome. But it is certainly challenging at times. But you know, when you get it right, it's rewarding.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the ultimate part, right? Is like, I've had some other people on here talking about rehab and like the pure joy and elation of the group when a guy goes out and throws his first bullpen and like feels good afterwards or has a live BP and like they're all out there watching it. Like, it's almost like, hey, listen, BJ, you got to push lift back because we're going to watch so-and-so's live BP. And like, they all walk out to the field together. Yep. They all come back together. You know, they're all high-fiving. They're all celebrating. It's like, again, I paid a little bit more attention to the combine this year than I have in the past. And like, there's big groups of people that go into getting that guy ready for the combine. And like, they all celebrate together because it's, you know, it's a victory for everyone. And of course, ultimately the athlete himself or herself is the ultimate, like that's the most important person, but there are so many people who are rooting for them to succeed. And, you know, it's a weird dichotomy because like some of those pitchers are like competing with each other for spots on the roster, but when they're rehabbing together, they're like, dude, you got to get out of here. You got to do this. You got to do that. We're going to do this together. You know, it's a lot of fun to see. And again, I think there's so many challenges that come with being a rehab strength coach that, like you said, if you were to look back before versus now, I'm, you know, night and day, it's a different feel of how good of a coach you are, how good of a person you are, like, and it's just a really intriguing challenge that I think people should not shy away from. I should probably take my own advice, but you know what I mean? But like, there's so much that goes into it that, like you said, you're constantly calling audibles, and the best that I've been around can call an audible and make it look like that was the play call and nobody knows the difference. And they can see things in the running progression that like, you know, hey, we really should have gotten to here, but let's shut it down today. I'm seeing some not good stuff, but next time, like, we'll be there. And like, they already know. And I think that gives the athlete some peace of mind that, you know, like you said, everybody's on the same team, everybody's working together. And ultimately, like, you've built that trust with them. And I think that part is just so valuable for strength coaches that it's just like, everybody's going to know the X's and O's. Everybody is going to know the progressions, but you know, I think I've said this before, a lot of young coaches coming up just don't know how to connect with people. They don't know how to communicate with people. They don't know how to have a presence in a room that like, it matters. That stuff really, really matters, especially at the highest level of sport. Like, if they don't trust you, like, they're not going to come to you. There's not.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to be, I mean, person first, coach second. It's the truth.
Let's run with this. So my next thing that I have for you is just what makes a strength and conditioning coach successful. Is it that communication piece or is there more to that?
Yeah, I think that's a huge piece. I'd say, you know, like have some feel to go with your science. Know who's in front of you. You know, there's certain guys that they're meatheads like us. And there's other guys that the weight room's not there. That's not their scene. But obviously you got to get both of those guys to do, you're always going to have to get both of those guys to do stuff that they don't want to do in the weight room. And that's where it's like, how can you trick them into getting what they want? Sometimes I feel like that's the feel piece. You know, to go with the science is like, hey, movement screen says this, you know, or jump metrics say we need this. I know that this meathead just wants a hammer trap bar deadlift, but that is the last thing that he needs to do. And like, how can you get him to believe that he needs to do, you know, trap bar jump or hit it for velocity, whatever it may be. You know, I personally, like in the rehab setting, I'll use some stuff from PRI or like, you know, just things that people think are weird and they are naturally. But you know, it's like, some guys, they are just, they're not getting on their back and they're not putting their feet up on the wall and they're not going to listen to the 4, 5, 6 cues that exercise has. And so, you know, part of being like being able to call to Omaha, like what else do you got that doesn't require that many cues? You know, I think that's where, again, like I've grown as a coach, learned other things, put other things in my playbook that can help with that. But yeah, that's, I again think is when I was a young coach, if I could go back and tell myself, like, put the books down and the sets and reps, there's no magic exercises, there's no magic schemes, there's no magic periodization plan. Like, the magic is knowing what gets each guy going and like what gets the most out of him. Is he a mess around with him, like tell him he can't do it type of guy? Is he the guy that constantly needs like, you got this, man, you are gonna smack this, like you did hit 80s on bench, you're gonna run as fast as you ever have today, that type of guy? Or, you know, who is he? And that's how you get the most out of him.
Yeah, those, it's the intricacies of coaching that kind of make the difference as you go. And I think you have to know the X's and O's, of course. I think if you don't have that foundation to like fall back on, even like we talked about earlier, like I don't think you really stand a chance. Like if nothing else, like if you can write a really good program and deliver it and get the adaptations you're looking for, like that's a good starting point. But that level of just coaching, of just knowing, like, you know, I've been around guys for sure that I'm like, all I have to do is tell them they can't do something and they're gonna try their damnedest. You can't deadlift 405. Watch me. See, you told me I couldn't. I'm like, yeah, but I deep down wanted you to. And then there are some that are the opposite. Like, you have to play games with them to get them to do anything. Like, you know, sometimes you got to tie their shoes for them to get them to trap our deadlift. Sometimes you got to do body comp a certain way. Sometimes you got to, you know, the weigh-in is only on Wednesday. You know what I mean? Like, it's just,
yeah,
those are the intricacies that go much further that just take you to another level as a coach. And I think the beauty of professional baseball is you spend so much time together. So you really, if you pay attention and you observe what's around you, like you can figure out what makes anybody tick. And then when you do, like, that's a game you're going to win 9 out of 10 times. You know what I mean? Like, that's just, and I like those odds, you know, you're not going to win every time, but
right,
you can win most of the time as a coach, like you're probably in a pretty good place.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's like, you know, I used to joke when I worked in college, like, you know, the women's tennis team doesn't want the version of me that's the assistant football strength coach, and the football team doesn't want the version of me that's the women's tennis strength coach. And it's just, again, like the program, I mean, I got barbells, dumbbells, kettlebells, like we really aren't doing that much different, but it's just the delivery of it that changes it for each athlete.
Yeah. I had a really, really good buddy in grad school. And this is a funny story. Like, we had women's soccer coming in and he was hyped up. He had just, I don't know, PR'd or something. And like, we also helped with football, and he took like a stapler and like stapled his head, thinking like, yeah, this will get them going. And they all like came over and like kind of stood behind me and they're like, is he okay? Like, is everything all right? But then from then on, like, they were in my back pocket because they're like, well, we're not going to that guy. Like, he's crazy. Like, Chris is the tame one of the two. And I'm like, dude, thank you so much. Like, you just won me a huge victory there. And then also, like, I let them know you're only sometimes crazy, not all the time. But no, it's just, you know, I would agree with you completely. It's just knowing the audience that's there. And I don't think that is only player related. I think that's probably staff related, front office related, you know, ownership related, like knowing who is around, being able to kind of play that chameleon role. And it's not, I don't think it's like a shady, schemey type of thing. I think it's just being able to communicate with the person that's there, right? Some people are willing to talk to you forever. Some people just want you to tell them what to do. Some people don't want to be talked to at all. And like, understanding who is there, what gets them going, What turns them away from you, I think, really helps. And I think that's something that as coaches, and especially in the rehab group, like we talked about earlier, if there's a player that goes to somebody for a certain reason, whether that's their personality, their communication style, whatever, like talking with that person and knowing what they're doing well to help that athlete will help you in turn, like when you need to make a point to them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's a fun game that we play. And, you know, the art side of coaching is just so much deeper than people understand. But I think, you know, ultimately, if nothing else, like being a good person and, you know, being somebody that you'd want to be around for 12 hours a day, like kind of goes a long way. Like,
right.
You know, if you're an asshole all the time, like eventually you're going to wear people out and be like, I just don't want to be around that guy anymore. Like, he's just exhausting. So let's talk about advice. Do you have any advice for others, either young coaches that maybe they're in college now, but they want to get into pro ball, or coaches that, you know, specifically might want to travel the rehab route, or just anybody listening that's been around a while that, you know, just wants to learn?
Yeah, I think, you know, being in the pro side of things now, like you see it more than ever that skill is king. Especially in a game like this, like obviously in a sport like football, you know, you can get away with just being a strong, powerful dude that can just manhandle people, especially O-line, D-line. But eventually, like, skill will catch up to you. I think in baseball, it's, I mean, from the get-go, like the most skillful guys get signed early in Latin America. They get drafted. You know, like never losing sight of that. And then just to like being patient, I think is huge as a strength coach. Like I started lifting weights with my dad a long, long, long time ago in our basement. And I'll never forget one of the first times he's like, you know, lifting weights is like stacking pieces of paper on top of each other. He's like, you lift once, twice, like 10 times, the stack barely moves, but you start stacking 100, 150, 200, 250, like that stack just continues to grow and grow little by little. And that's long-term athlete development at the complex in rehab. Like that is my life. I stack pieces of paper. Like we are going so slow. And then before you know it, 9 months has gone by and like, we're just, the progress that we've made is awesome. And, you know, to a young coach where, again, I think back to when I was young, like I wanted to know everything. I wanted to get results immediately, like 4 week, put 6 inches on your vertical jump program and stuff like that. Like if it exists, it's not for long. And just being able to play the long game, I think will inevitably win out.
Yeah, I love the analogy there, man. And it's really relevant. And I think I would agree. Like if I could go back, I feel like I was just constantly like, if I read 50 books this year, I will be that much better than everyone else. But then I wasn't reading for comprehension. I was just reading to say I read the books. And now it's like, maybe I read one or two books a month, but I really soak that in. Or like I take 15 minutes to spend time with my wife instead of burying myself in a book. And like all [S2] Yep. [S1] Of a sudden, like my happiness is different. And, you know, so it's just sometimes it's just things you have to learn as you go. But I would agree, like I don't want to say this generation specifically, but I think like it's probably been this way for a long time. It's like the instant gratification is very real with social media and with just the way that news travels so fast nowadays. Like we were just talking, Karen and I were just talking the other day, like, do you remember when this happened? Like how long ago was that? And it was like 2 weeks ago. And it was like, feels like years ago in the news, like in the media, like the news cycle. And it's like, everything is just so fast, so fast, so yep. fast. And like, if you can find the time to just slow down, you know, and, you know, like you said, and before you know it, in 9 months, you've stacked a lot of wins. But if you're trying to stack 10 pieces of paper in one day when you're capable of only stacking one or two, like eventually that stack's going to fall. It's not as sturdy. It's not as stable. And you know, I think full circle, that probably brings us back to like where we started this conversation. It's like, you know, people want to stack 10 pieces of paper in a day and be 10 pages ahead, but that stack is built on one Jenga block that's going to certainly like tumble. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's probably a really good way to look at it. And, you know, for you, I'm sure some days it feels like the same shit, different day. I'm sure for the players, it feels the same way. And, you know, there's times where you have to motivate yourself. You know, it's the reality. It's like, oh, if you're working this job, you're never working. It's like, no, you're still like, you're grinding. You know what I mean? You feel August just as much as the next guy does. Like, you feel that week in January just as much as the next guy does. Like, it's not, we're not immune to feeling tired. We're not immune to feeling overworked. We're not immune to feeling just run down. And like, sometimes the player like sees that and they're like, hey, you all right? And like, yeah, we're in this together, man. Like, well, lucky for you, like, I'm feeling good today, so I'll pick you up. You know, you're always picking me up. And like, that's, for me, that's the really cool part, right? Is like a player just checks in with you. You know, you talk about being with a guy 30, 40 minutes after the lift and just talking shop. And like, you know, before you know it, that guy knows that you really love cooking and he's bringing you in like a great cut of meat and like, hey, go cook this up for you and your wife, man. You guys are going to love this. I got this from the local butcher. Like, it's just cool stuff like that, that I think connects the human side that sometimes gets lost in this like search for data and numbers and, you know, faster, faster, faster to get there. It's like, I really think the game in the future, like the winners are going to be the ones who prioritize that like long-term athleticism and being good people and like the human element side. And I think the pendulum has kind of swung one way and I think eventually it'll swing back, but that might be a conversation for a different day. So
yeah,
before we go too far down that one, maybe we should dive into continuing ed resources, books, podcasts, seminars. Like, what would you recommend either from a rehab perspective or just a general knowledge perspective?
Man, books. I'd say like my all-time favorite, you know, like you talked about like reading 100 books a year and just stupid stuff you did when you were young and trying to jam knowledge in your head. Like, I think I read Triphasic Training 10 years ago, and I think I've read it like 40 times since the first time I've read it, and probably 30 in the last 4 years. It's just a classic for me. And I think the cool thing is like all the different iterations that the author Cal Dietz has come out with since then, where it's just, he's constantly evolving his practice and still has his foundations in the, you know, the original programs in the book and stuff, but just cool to see, like, you think this dude's a genius the first time you read the book and he's still out there learning. So it's just, again, you know, part of like being patient, and you'll never know everything. So just continue to evolve. That's a huge one for me. You know, even the most basic iteration of it is awesome. Seminars, big one for me the last year. I took Connor Harris's biomechanics course. I think rehab wise, that's been probably one of my most helpful resources, just in terms of like, why would I use a contralateral load? Why would I use the same ipsilateral load? Would I put a wedge here? Why would I put a wedge there? You know, just like answering those questions with being like a weight room MacGyver, you know, and just like coming up with, again, you know, PRI nerd stuff. And some guys love it, some guys hate it. But I think the cool thing is like, if you do have that guy where it's like, man, you could really use some internal rotation on those hips, dude. Like, yeah, well, I'm not putting my feet up on the wall. Like, I'm here to lift. And it's like, all right, well, I could do this and this. And you have no idea, but we're hammering out some internal rotation there. So that's been a huge one for me. You know, again, just navigating that space and being able to kind of play to each guy as far as what they like. And trying to think anything else on that front. Another book that I've read probably 20 times, Speed Strength by Joel Smith. I think it's a great book on speed. I think it's a better lesson for anyone, like any sport, his obviously the book's all about sprinting, but just really cutting out the fluff. Like if your goal is to run fast, how can we make sure that our training is all directed towards that? You know, and so maybe it speaks a little bit more to the specification type stuff, but I think he does a good job of walking you down the path of, you know, here's how a novice would train, guy or girl with a little bit greater training age, and then obviously your advanced athlete. And but it's all centered around like, this is our one goal. This is how we chase one singular thing. And, you know, we're, again, meatheads at heart. Like, we want to squat big. We want huge biceps. We want to throw the ball 100 miles an hour and train for that every single day. Like, buddy, you're gonna get toasted in about a week and a half. So it's a good lesson and just simple. Keep it simple.
Yeah, 10 pages versus one page, right?
Exactly.
BJ, it's been a lot of fun, man. I'm really enjoying this. I don't want to take too much of your time. Obviously, you're in the swing of spring training, and I think the clocks push forward tonight, so you might be losing some time. Ooh. So the worst day of the year for everyone. But
seriously,
if you have time, I'd like to do the lightning round, and then I promise I'll get you out of here, all right?
Let's hammer it.
All right, buddy. Four questions, as long or short of answers as you like. First question, who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
I would be remiss to not say Eric Cressy. Had the opportunity, their first facility was like 20 minutes from where I grew up. So I trained there as an athlete, got to intern there when I got out of my undergrad. So it was cool to see it on both sides of the equation, athlete, and then work in it as a coach. You know, and then Eric's obviously been a huge help for me landing in different spots. And then somewhat of an inspiration with like that dude's knowledge of the arm in general. Like I'll just shoulder, elbow, arm is in, you know, an inch wide and a mile deep. And it's just, he's chased that and he's an expert in the field on it. And so, you know, just makes you realize like, if you have one thing that you're passionate about, you know, go learn that. Like we talked about, you can't be an expert overnight, but just stay the course.
One piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
Four years ago, I probably would have punched myself in the face for this one, but I have come to love the Kaiser. I will say that. You know, can go from floor to ceiling, different weights, give you a power readout. You can do a lot of different things with it. I feel like it's, if I had one piece, that's as versatile as it gets.
4 years ago, would you have said barbell?
I don't know what I would have said, honestly. Probably something.
It wouldn't have been Kaiser.
It would not have been a Kaiser. I've honestly, like, I have not been a friend of that thing for a while, but something about it in the last year, it's grown on me.
You learn to love it. You learn to love it. Especially in baseball, you learn to love it.
Yes. Yeah.
Biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
I'll go personally. Becoming a dad was like, I thought I was prepared for it. And then, man, you see your child for the first time and it is life-changing, to say the least. So that is something that's just been awesome. You know, there's like the every time I'm with my son, it's like everything stops and you're just completely present in that moment. So that's definitely, you know, there's nothing that compares to that.
Last one, any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
During COVID, like when everything shut down, I started delivering for Amazon out of my Honda Accord. And, you know, I kind of grew to like it. Like there was a period of time where I was like, you know what, if this strength thing doesn't work out, if I don't get a job after this grad assistantship, I could work for like UPS, long haul truck driving, even though I'm scared to drive like an F-150, just getting something, getting a lane and just go straight for a long, long time. I feel like that could kind of be my gig.
I weirdly like love long distance driving. I've made the drive out to Arizona like 4 or 5 times now. And I've always thought like I could really drive a truck. Like I mean, you'd have to learn it, but like nobody's messing with a truck. You know what I
No.
mean? Like if worse comes to worse, you're just gonna drive over the top of
Yeah.
somebody. But you know, we talk about like quick news cycles and everything. Like it had to have been only a couple of months ago where everybody realized like how much UPS drivers are making like
Oh
six
my
figures,
God.
and I should do this, I should do that. Like, I don't know if I would, you know what I mean? But if you grew to love it, like,
Yeah.
you
The
know.
UPS, I mean, it's tough because like sometimes you drive, you deliver to this house, you drive 200 feet, you go in the back, you deliver to the next house. I could see that getting old, but the long haul stuff, I mean, I could get in the car and just go.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man, I went from Arizona to Buffalo straight one time, which I would not recommend anyone does. But we made it. I don't know how we made it, but we did. But no, I've had a great time catching up with you, man. I don't want to take any more of your time. The last thing I'll ask you is just contact info. If the listeners want to get in touch with you, where is the best place to go?
I'll shoot you guys to my email. It's bfoley, FOLEY, at redsox.com. Got to get the social media cranking here, obviously, this day and age. Get all the likes from my sexy exercise post, of course.
Keep all the good ones for yourself and just post the
Yeah.
sexy ones. Get your likes and everybody's happy. So,
That's right.
I appreciate your time, man. We'll definitely catch up again soon and best of luck with everything moving forward.
Absolutely. Thank you. Good luck out there in the new gig.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude part two of this two-part episode with BJ. I hope you enjoyed both parts one and two. I know selfishly for me, I really enjoy having these conversations regarding rehab because it's not a strong suit of mine. And so I tend to take a lot of notes and really just enjoy these conversations and learn a lot from the coaches that I talk to. Three things that I took from BJ in this part of the episode: have some feel to go with the science, know the person in front of you, and stacking small victories will help make big victories more attainable. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.